Welcome to the Demimonde Podcast, an unofficial podcast covering the Showtime series Penny Dreadful. Bonus podcast. Thank you for joining us today. I am your host, Em.
I'm Steve.
And I'm Paul.
Oh, wait. Ooh, after eight episodes, you start talking.
Well, I thought it was Vikings.
And you're like, I'm out. What the fuck are y'all talking about?
He's been sitting over here in the corner for all eight episodes, not saying anything.
Well, you guys threatened me. I'm not going to say anything if you threaten me.
But he's here now, so.
And you've watched all eight episodes?
Yes, seven.
Wait a minute.
It's a good show.
So tell us your review of the show.
It had its ups and its downs for me. You know, the first few episodes, I had really high hopes for it. And then it gets to a point to where I think it stales out a little bit just for me. And then it picks right back up to where I enjoyed the rest of the season. You know, I just think that some of it, they could have shortened it and maybe put in a little more action because they give you these great teasing scenes to where they're fighting vampires and people are possessed. And then it gives you a storyline where it kind of fills in the gaps on what's going on. And I just think they could have shortened it up a little bit.
The storylines?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, some of them. You know, I mean, there's so much that when you think that for eight episodes, there's so much going on within this show with each character and everything that's going. I just think there was a couple episodes that they could have even just maybe revamped or, you know, like the scene where the two make out, the cowboy and Mr. Gray. I just don't think it was necessary. I really don't. I know you guys are laughing because I've brought it up like a million times, but it doesn't make sense.
The cowboy and Mr. Gray. That's what they should have called that episode.
Absolutely. Because, I mean, it just that whole section where they leave the play, even the play itself. You know, yeah, they leave her there, and his girlfriend goes back to the hotel because she's sick. But that whole section, there was really no point to it.
I've thought about it, and I think the point of it, and it's not a very strong support mm-hmm. of it, but it's because later on when Ives is possessed mm-hmm. and she's calling out everybody's darker elements, she does not call out the wolf. You know, Wolfman, werewolf thing of Ethan, but she calls that out because I think they were trying to, like, have the big reveal of him being a werewolf toward the end, even though they were telegraphing it so heavily.
Yeah, but there had to be something else, like, oh, the woman you're sleeping with is dying and she's a prostitute. That would work just as well as you got bent over by Mr. Gray. I'm just saying that even if you wanted to keep that in there, it could have been a faster scene than having to go through them in the dog fights and the violence. We know that, what's his name? The cowboy,
you know, Ethan Chandler.
You know, Ethan's got some kind of torrid background already with the people coming to get him and everything. I just think that it could have been, it could have just been a shorter scene and just given us more maybe about Frankenstein. Cause I didn't feel like there was really enough about him and his monsters. You know,
it's
I think
Frankenstein.
There could have been more. Frankenstein. Oh, I keep forgetting.
Is Frankenstein your favorite character?
No, it was at one point. But then when we go to that possession scene with the whole episode was her being possessed, it was just such phenomenal acting. I think she saved the show for me. I really did because she was amazing. And you guys know I don't like usually possession stuff. I'm a bit of a puss. So it was.
But when
it
it's
was
done
amazing.
Right,
it was
it's
amazing.
Compelling and it's yes. it's frightening, but it's good storytelling at the mm-hmm. same time.
Yeah, she was the shining star of that season for sure.
She's a fantastic actress. Was there anything in particular that scared you watching that series?
No, actually, it wasn't anything really frightening. I don't know. Maybe I'm finally getting desensitized or it was just really well put together, a lot of it. You know, like I said, there was just a few episodes to where it was like, all right, you know, come on. Let's get moving because, like I said, the first couple, they give you so much. And then it just kind of slowed the change of pace and those middle episodes were a little slow. I had to, like, trudge on, and then when I got to that part to where she's possessed, it was, like, perked me back up because it really is such an amazing job. And then her storyline itself, I didn't expect at all. I had no clue.
So what was the slow stuff? That was it, her background, the Closer Than Sisters episode where you get her background when she...
Yeah, before she's possessed, there's that. There's, I think that they could have moved the Frankenstein stuff on a little more, you know, because he has the body of the vampire and they give you the tattoos and what it means. Not Frankenstein, but the whole thing. And then it slows down to where you really don't know anything else that's going on. You know, they give you more of Frankenstein dealing with the monster and him wanting. And it's cool that we get to see the monster and his emotions and everything that's going on, but they just dragged it out a little bit too long for me.
So you weren't a big fan of Caliban?
No, I loved it. I just thought it was too much. It's like, you know, everybody knows the heartfelt part of Frankenstein. Mm-hmm. You know, even in the old original movie, you feel bad for the monster at one point because he does it. It's not his fault.
Mm-hmm.
I just think that they stretched it out just a little longer. Like, even when he goes and kills that girl at the, or goes and attacks the girl in the play.
Maud.
You think that she's going to be the one that he's going to turn into the Bride of Frankenstein.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
they spent all that time on it, and then it's not. So it's like, well, why'd you spend all this time on it? We know he's... We already had the wonderful episode where it shows how he gets picked up by the guy in the play and gives him a home, and we see bits and pieces here and there. I personally didn't need the full stretch of more of him. I would rather have just seen him go ahead and be in it less, and then when we get to the end, have him press, you know, Dr. Frankenstein into giving him a bride.
I think it was a crucible he had to go through to come out the other end and to be able to go back to Victor for help. Because without it, because he learned kindness by meeting Vincent Brand, and then he thought he had a chance at love, and and then basically was knocked back down to probably his darkest time ever, even compared to his birth, which was very horrifying, his birth, I thought. But so I think that's the explanation for that from my
interpretation. he couldn't go to Frankenstein at the end in a position of power. He had to go, you know,
seeking help.
That way it would kind of equalize their relationship and bring it back to where, because going forward in the second season, there's going to be interactions between the two of them. And so you can't have another whole season where he's threatening to kill everybody that he loves.
Well, what about the, I think a lot of the Mr. Gray scenes too were a bit unnecessary.
With Ives between them two?
I mean, it just seemed to drag out a little bit when there's so much more to cover. Now, it could have just been me. It just being a slower part of the show, you know, but it just seemed to drag a few in those scenes where it didn't seem as necessary. Like, you can still have the scenes, but maybe shorten them up a little bit and then give us more with, you know, there's a lot of characters, like even more with his daughter that was captured by the vampire that they were using. You know, I would have loved to have seen more of her in her story, but we might get that in the future also.
Yeah, I'm wondering what we're going to get of Dorian Gray, because it seems like his main function was to have Ive lose control of herself and to become possessed.
And to have something dirty on the cowboy.
Yeah.
I mean, well, I like his story.
The show is playing a long game. All of these characters, we're just now getting the beginnings of where they're going to go. So I don't think we can look at whatever contributions that Dorian Gray's character made to this particular season right now as the only thing that there's going to be, and look for the final meaning of it there. It's going to keep going.
Yeah.
I hope he continues. I actually like his character a lot.
I do too. I just think that some of the writing just got a little slow for my taste when there's so much, like in the back of your head, you know, there's so much that's going on. And it's like, this is what I'm going to get for the next 30 minutes. Please give me something else. It left me wanting more, but towards the end of the season, it picked right back up to where there wasn't anything. You know, like I said, there's only a couple of episodes. It sounds petty that I just kind of watch through to get to the next one.
I made a joke to Steve when when Victor had a Brona on the table. I was like, what if Paul was Caliban? We get a text from Paul, it would just say awesome, like, because it's Rose, you know.
Oh yeah, they would
with your little happy face made with a number 8.
Yes, I'm a doctor. For those who are don't get it, I'm a Doctor Who fan, and she's one of my favorite.
We're all companions. Doctor Who fans, but that's Paul's favorite companion.
Well, yeah, her and Amy Pond. I mean, how do you not love Amy Pond?
Yeah,
I agree. True. Amy's my favorite.
But if you had to choose.
I'd probably go with Rose, because Amy was kind of, she treated Rory like crap.
Everybody says that. But she's true, though. It's true.
She does.
But she came around.
That guy waited 1,000 years. 1,000 years.
Oh, and that made him so hot.
30 minutes later, I would have been like, I'm going to go ahead and go. I'll be back to check up on you, and then probably flake out and feel bad about it. Rose was there to the end. She loved the doctor.
Mm-hmm.
Spoilers.
Yeah. If you haven't watched it, she was in love.
But yes, so I'm a Rose fan.
So, well, now we're going to go into some feedback that we're going to use as a way to just comment a little bit more on the show itself. And this is from our longtime listener, Wiley D. Cody. She actually has not been watching the show. She's been listening to us. And we have other listeners who've been doing that,
too.
Well,
that shows how well, how good of a job you guys have done, though, that they're willing to listen. And then you guys are covering it so well. I think it's fantastic.
I think it they like it really Vikings, is. And they followed us over from that. But they anyway, I think it's cool that people are doing that.
And
so.
You do such a thorough job on your recaps. That absolutely. They're fantastic.
Well, thank you. But I actually did that because for this show, a little bit more thorough because I knew D. Cody was going to be listening that way. So Steve's going to read from D. Cody's insightful, despite the fact that she hasn't watched the show, you know, prediction.
Yeah, I mean,
thoughts on it.
I mean, she brings up a lot of really good points and questions, especially not having actually watched the show.
Yeah.
Because I've
never
done that before. I've never listened to a podcast and not have watched the show, because a podcast has always, to me, been something that you watch in tandem with the show.
It's major spoilery.
Yeah. I'm going to know everything now. I'm going to know. But we also had some, like, Hot Tub was writing us back and forth. And we read what he had said in the air, I think, at the end of last episode.
There's a couple episodes we featured some feedback by him, yeah.
But she's kind of referring to some of the stuff that he says. And she says, speaking of Hot Tub, I consider his prior statements of when Malcolm Murray seemed to look like a demon in Vanessa's eyes. I have had trouble with one thing from the first episode. If Vanessa and Ethan both know that their inner, quote, infection and possessed power, I can understand how they can walk into a dwelling of thralls and be able to endure the trial, like in the first episode when they kind of walk
absolutely.
In. Yeah. However, I'm perplexed with Malcolm Murray and wonder if he has a demon or some voodoo side to him. Is he really just shaken, not stirred? And an Indiana Jones-like character in search of his own treasures and impervious to getting possessed? I wonder if he has a Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Jive side to him, or something more devilish that is not yet revealed. So I reconsidered Hot Tub's initial thoughts that Malcolm Murray might have been viewed as a demon like he was. Okay, so I guess she's asking, in a nutshell, do you think that Malcolm Murray possesses something to him that is maybe preternatural or perhaps supernatural that helps him to withstand, that gives him kind of an edge when he's dealing with supernatural powers, like when he walked into the whole lair of thralls? Mm-hmm. What do you guys think?
I've got something on this.
Go ahead.
I mean, even in the last episode, in the last couple episodes, we find out more about him and then what he made his son do. He's got an evil side to him. You know, and he's a hunter, and the things that we find out about him are pretty effed up to begin with. So I just think that he's just a bad person all around. And when, you know, and he's, you know, like I say, he's a hunter and a traveler. He's seen a lot of things. There could possibly be, you know, some kind of witch voodoo spell, but I just think that he's got a family member in trouble. So he's willing to go and do absolutely anything, which we see throughout the season, that he's really willing to do anything to get his daughter, and that he's done such atrocities on the road and hunting and doing whatever that it just doesn't faze him.
What do you think?
I've been studying for next season. I'm learning about Victorian Britain, and I'm just learning about the explorers going to Africa and some of the stuff that they had to endure there, like swimming through water infested with rhino pee and poo, and the beetles burrowing into ears, and that one guy like just trying to kill it with a penknife, and also just being killed and being plundered for all of their, everything that had on them. There were some explorers who they would finish their trek almost completely naked because they would keep encountering tribes and having to give them gifts because that was what you did. So I think having that background probably just made him prepared pretty much for anything.
Yeah,
that's pretty tough. So that's my thought on that.
What I thought was, you know, and I wrote this back to D. Cody in an email, but I'm going to say it on the podcast for the benefit of everybody else who might be listening, is it's possible that he could have something like that, but I don't really subscribe to it. I think he's just a badass. Mm-hmm. I think maybe it's something that, like you guys said, he learned in Africa, killing his way through all these bloody miles, as he said. Maybe it's something he learned from Sembene. You know, he taught him
something.
Well,
we don't know a lot about him yet either.
No.
So he could be a shaman himself.
But I think he's, like Paul pointed out, he's trying to save his daughter, so he's just a ruthless bastard. Mm-hmm. And he's doing whatever he needs to do, and if it's coming up and shooting vampire thralls right in the head, I don't think he's impervious to any kind of supernatural stuff. No. I think he's just one of those people where it's like, let's do it.
Yeah, Batman pajama.
Yeah. And so next she says, I was confused to why Ethan and Dorian had a, what she calls a bro-bro-ho-ho moment. That cracks me up.
Yeah, that's me what, too.
I don't blame her. I said the same thing.
I've never heard that before, but it made me think of, 30 Rock when Jack Donaghy is like, he's like, Lemon, here at TGS, we have a strict bros before hoes policy. And in this particular episode, Ethan had a bros before Brona policy. Because he was getting down with old Dorian there, and I think, you know, there's been a lot of debate about, you know, this whole thing, but I think what it is that it was an illustration of, I don't think it was a wasted scene. I think it was an illustration of Dorian Gray's supernatural ability to attract people to him, be they male, be they female. I don't necessarily even know that Ethan was particularly bisexual in his past sexual encounters before that. I think that this is something that Dorian possesses in his repertoire.
We need to get Malcolm Murray.
Yeah, maybe it's a pheromone. Yeah.
Get Malcolm Murray and Dorian Gray in a room together and
see
what happens.
If he can pull him, then he's definitely down for the...
Yeah.
He's got some powers.
She says, I'm not opposed or offended to the joining, but it seems like werewolves don't ho-ho like vampires.
Well, yeah, that's exactly what I said. It just doesn't make sense. It wasn't needed. Yeah.
So I was wondering if Ethan was either trying to distract Dorian from discovering something or thought that perhaps a bro-bro moment with Dorian could cleanse him of his infection. I guess my gut felt like there was more to this than what seemed to be shown. I thought about that for a second. I don't think that Ethan was trying to distract Dorian from anything, and I don't think Dorian was trying to distract him for anything, because he wouldn't have brought him to his house.
They were just out partying.
They were out partying, and I think it was a character development story, but it was mostly to let us know things about Dorian Gray, not Ethan.
Mm-hmm. You just never know what's going to happen.
And this party could go in any direction.
I thought they were going to fight. I really did. I was like, oh, here comes beatdown, and then schmooch fest. I was like, oh, Lord.
She says, relative to other predictions, this is made by M, Dorian is more than a lover boy, and his other side will reveal more of an evil side, especially since Van rejected him. That's an emotion he's not used to dealing with or used to feeling at all. Mm-hmm. So
she thinks he's going to go dark.
That'd be cool.
Yeah, I guess that's what she's saying. She said, I view Dorian's portrait, like what Steve mentioned in one of the episodes, as a representation of the worst, horrific, grotesque vision an individual can see. So each person sees something different. It's a DNA makeup that absorbs the evil. I also consider that anyone besides him who views the portrait will actually lose their soul and or die if or reveal that this is the bright burning light that will sizzle the soul. Something like one of the Indiana Jones movies. I think you mentioned a bright light in the first show where that mother and daughter got slaughtered, and I still don't really understand who did that.
Yeah, well, see, I've gone back and rewatched that first episode, and I think there is actually a darkened window behind the woman that sits down on the little privy thing. Uh-huh. So I don't know if whatever killed her, which now we're thinking I don't want to believe it's Ethan, but
aliens.
yeah,
but I think busted through the window, so maybe it was light outside, and maybe that was the source of the light. But it was when the little girl walked into the room, there was a bright light. So I thought maybe it was a magical source of light, but when I go back and watch it could have very well have been from a window.
Do you guys think it was Ethan that did it?
I refuse to believe that was Ethan.
Yeah.
What about you, Paul?
I don't even remember the scene. It's terrible.
I
was going to try and fake it, and I was like, I'll just be honest. I'm trying to remember.
Well, do you think he killed everybody in that inn when he killed the two
Possibly,
guys?
Possibly, yes. Because if you look at the background of werewolves, I mean, they don't have cognitive choice of their actions. You know what I mean? So if they're sticking to the standard werewolf and not, you know, something from one of these recent movies nowadays, I think possibly he actually killed everybody in there. Just because even when he wakes up later in the shipyard or wherever he's at, he's just kind of like, oh, fuck.
Yeah.
What did I do?
And the scene after the prostitute was killed, he woke up in that same shipyard.
So I think if they're sticking to the old school werewolf, which I think they should, then yes. I do.
She says, I'm inclined to think it wasn't Ethan, though it seems like the show wants us to move that way.
You guys are hot for him, that's why.
No, yeah, you guys.
I am a little. When I saw him wielding that axe, I was like, yeah! He needs to lock himself up like Seth Green as Oz.
Yeah, when he knows the full moon is coming out, just...
put himself in a jail cell.
Chain himself up.
This brings me to what M said in the last episode. I think there is something else doing the brutal murders. Perhaps I see and feel Ethan like a Ragnar, Caliban like Rollo, and Vanessa is part Lagertha, Siggy, and Princess Oslaug. And heck, while I'm at it, there is the godlike view of themselves with Victor and Floki. Interesting. Mm-hmm. The butler did it. This brings me to Sembene. There's way more to him, and his whole story will come out in the next season. It is voodoo African style, or is it Egyptian? We don't know anything about this guy. Mm-mm. And I had some, you know, I wrote to Hot Tub about that too. He was kind of the same opinion, like what's going on with this dude. But I don't want him to have this. I think I've said this before, but I'll just say it because it's Mona's cast. But I don't want him to just have one episode where they tell us everything that's pertinent about his character.
Like an Ives episode?
Yeah, I'd like it to kind of slowly unfold and to be like an enigma
of
mystery.
Give a little piece of all of it.
Yeah.
Kind of the way Game of Thrones does. You know, give you a little piece of each, leave you wanting more.
But I mean, we know that.
But we do need some more character development for him, I think.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I hope they.
Because he just can't be a bitch slapping cat killer forever. I mean, there's got to be a little bit more to him. she says, Proteus and Brona pair up from the dead. We know Brona's coming back, but Proteus got parted like the Red Sea, so I think he's done.
Yeah.
I don't
like the Red Sea.
That was when we knew that we could never love Caliban.
Which one was Proteus?
The first. Well, actually, the second, technically.
Yeah.
Dough face.
Yes. Yeah, the dough face. Vanessa will want to be cured, but can't be. Okay. Remember in Farscape when Scorpius said, unique is always valuable?
Mm-hmm.
I think she's going to stick to that ethic. Not because Scorpius said it, obviously, but because it's true.
She should.
You know, I think she's going to, you know, at the end, they kind of leave it, you know, as a mystery to whether or not she's going to go through with an exorcism or not, you know, that's officially sanctioned by the church and is done by the Roman ritual and the whole nine yards. And I think her decision is kind of, I'm assuming she doesn't do it because that's what keeps her uniqueness and that's what's going to keep her as
powerful
and give her some sort of edge over the supernatural baddies that they're going to fight.
If you keep the werewolf around who can kind of do the prayer on you, then you're solid, which is why another reason why it would make sense that he's not doing the killings of his own volition, because he wouldn't have been able to use the coin. And
what did you think was the reason why he was able to do that? Did you have any speculation as to, did it come out of nowhere for you that he could just pull that out?
A little bit, but like you said, we don't have a ton on him. So, you know, he could still be religious, especially when you're going through an ailment like that. You're going to look towards, you know, God or whatever to try and get rid of it. That's why I don't think that he knows what he's doing when he wolfs out. You know, it's purely the beast coming out. Otherwise, I really don't think he would have been able to put the demon back. So that's why what's-his-name could never do it, the old guy.
So he really is an American werewolf in London.
Exactly.
Yeah, he is.
So when you stated, I'll give this one to you to answer to, but when you stated about the spiders in the first show, they're a clue to me. I wonder if they are the actual carriers of the, quote, infection. I'm still trying to figure out if Malcolm Murray is the father of Vanessa, and part of what is or isn't in Malcolm Murray is in his DNA, and then would that be passed on to her?
I had did some research about spiders because I was hoping to find something about it because I thought that there had to be an association. And in the Victorian era, there was a novella that was written called The Black Spider. It's considered one of the first books of that type of genre, like you would find with, like, H.P. Lovecraft and what would you call that? Not horror necessarily, but the spider was representative of the devil. In that story. And then there's also another poem that was popular during that time called The Spider and the Fly, which apparently is also quoted by the Doctor in various incarnations as the Doctor and in various episodes, which I'm going to have to pay attention because...
Doctor Who?
Okay. Yeah, Doctor Who.
Who?
But anytime he's in a trap, he says...
Something about coming to my parlor?
So yeah, I guess when the Doctor detects a trap... what sometimes he'll say in Doctor Who, apparently, which I've not picked up, he'll say, "Will you walk into my parlor?" Because this is a very popular poem in Britain. A lot of people are very familiar with it. And I just, you know, if anybody's interested more about associations with spider and evil things, you know, look up The Spider and the Fly.
There might be a little bit of, like, confusion of cause and effect here, I think, with in regards to this discussion. I think the spiders are a manifestation of the evil that surrounds her, Vanessa. I don't think they're the cause of it.
No.
I don't think it's like a spider bite or anything like that. I don't think they're necessarily maybe carriers of an infection. I think
like locusts and stuff like that.
Yeah, like locusts with Pazuzu or whatever. But, you know, they kind of materialize
out of... Flies in Amityville.
Mm-hmm. Exactly, exactly.
Or was it bees?
It was flies. It was flies. And they materialize out of thin air because it's the ectoplasm or whatever you want to call it. It makes... That's what they are, I think.
Yeah. But, it's make you feel even creepier.
Mm-hmm. It's unsettling. Then,
butterflies wouldn't work. That would be my demon. Butterflies and ladybugs. Are you scared now? No. No, I'm not.
She mentions one more thing. I'm talking about the oranges. What's that girl's name? The girl, Maud?
Yeah, Maud.
Maud gives Caliban an orange. Mm-hmm. And then he tries to give it back to her to share with her and stuff like that. And she had pointed out, Cody pointed out that when she was younger, she would watch marathons of the Godfather series with her dad. Mm-hmm. And anytime somebody gave somebody else an orange in those movies, apparently...
It preempted a death.
He would say, another orange is a threat of death. Mm-hmm. So...
I'm ashamed of myself for not catching that. And I think it was probably a trick for the viewer, like if you're aware, because they use oranges in Breaking Bad as well. Mm-hmm. And if, you know, when she's given the orange, you know, I think it might have, you know, was supposed to be a cue for the viewer that she would become the bride of Frankenstein, but it's going to be Brona. But it was still, you know,
she was
foreshadowing
definitely
a death, but not Maud's.
Maybe the death of that relationship, the death of his time at the Grand Guignol.
Yeah.
I've also heard that orange
and,
is
the new
black.
And, you know, Ethan bought Brona an orange at the theater as well.
Yes, that's true.
Nice. I didn't catch any of that. That's awesome.
Mm-hmm. Good job, D. Cody.
Big time.
Yeah, and that's
she's not even watching the show.
I know. It's pretty amazing. It's amazing.
And she just lets us know. She at the end of it, she says, you know, that she used the Amazon link. So that's awesome.
Thank you. That
Amazon will send you a, quote, penny.
Penny.
Hey. Pennies go a long way.
They do. They add up.
Thank you very much for the letter. It was awesome, and it provided us with a good little bit of stuff to talk about on the show, which we might not have otherwise done, because we didn't really come into this bonus pod with a big full plan, and, you know, like we have with other bonus pods, like with Viking and Spartacus and stuff like that. But
real quick, I'm going to just talk about casting news, and then we'll finish this up.
Okay.
So we've got Patti LuPone that's been cast for second season as a mysterious character from Vanessa Ives' past. Susan Green, she was actually in Vikings, and she played Judith, King Ella's daughter.
Okay.
Which I think she's being recast for Vikings.
She show jumped, huh?
And so she's going to play the daughter of Madame Collie.
Ah. Ooh.
And Madame Collie is going to be the villain of next season, apparently. So
interesting.
Very interesting.
The show's got some stuff like set up for the long run because the vampire problem hasn't gone away.
No.
There's still a character named Jonathan Harker out there.
There's still a master out there.
There's still a master out there, which we could – we saw some behind-the-scenes stuff on YouTube when they were saying how – the creator wanted to kind of like do a mix up of all these Victorian era characters, but not necessarily and put them in the setting of like where there was a Dracula or vampires, but not use the count.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But that doesn't mean that they can't do that in the future.
Oh, yeah.
It drives me crazy when I go online and I read how many people say that they ripped off the League of Extraordinary Gentlemen. It's not a ripoff at all.
Well, that's when you got to kind of avoid the internet because you're always going to have people that hate just for the heck of putting it on the internet. I've read some of them. I've seen the movies. It's not – it can be if you really want to look at – like if you want to be nitpicky, but it's so not the League of Extraordinary Gentlemen. I mean, it really is.
Their agenda is way different. Dorian Gray is not in the comics.
Some of them
the
are evil. Just saying, you know. If you want to be nitpicky, yes, but I totally disagree. And it's just how the internet is. You could have something that's really good. But the people who aren't going to tell you to your face that it's bad are going to put it all over the internet because that's where they feel like their voice is heard the most. like us on podcasts.
Yeah.
There's going to be somebody from Vanessa's past on there, so that means that we're going to get
Patti LuPone.
Another, at least another one or two episodes of her backstory.
Are you familiar with her? What was the name of that show with Corky?
Oh, she was Life
the mom.
Goes On.
Life Goes On. She was the mom in that. So
oh, okay.
She's a Broadway actress primarily, but she's going to be in this. So.
Oh, nice.
So that means we're going to get, like I said, some more backstory from her.
She's a great actress.
And we can kind of fill in that gap between the time that she comes back from the insane asylum and her mom dies, and then the time that she's walking on the beach and she sees Mina and then decides that she needs to go see Malcolm Murray. Because a good amount of time has elapsed there, because she went from the Winona Ryder hair to the Vanessa Ives hair. And I just want to finish out my final comments on all of this. I know we're keeping it short and sweet, but is this show, this is one of my favorite shows. I might like this more than Vikings.
Wow. And you've only watched one season.
Yeah.
You're crazy.
It's
good, but you're crazy.
It's because I'm such a horror fan, and I've never seen horror done this well on TV.
Mm-hmm.
Period.
That's true.
Period. They got the possession correctly. They got the scare correctly, and they did a masterful job of combining two almost separate genres at this point, that being horror in the physical sense and terror, the psychological element. They meld them together, and that's what made a film like The Exorcist so successful and so good and so, you know, like punishing. And they nailed that. They got the essence of that. And I just never thought I would see this on TV, you know. And like, you've got really good, compelling characters with really complex backstories. Nobody is completely any one thing. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
They definitely keep you guessing, for sure.
They've got shades of gray, no pun intended. or pun intended, I guess.
Yeah.
Definitely intended.
It's usually intended.
Yeah. It's always intended. But it just had everything. You know, and I may change my view whenever Vikings comes back on and I get, you know, revving up for it. But this show is just, to me, it's like,
well,
the
it's
best
got you,
going
it's
right
got
now.
The type of show you'd like written all over it.
Yeah, and I've waited really forever does. For this. Mm-hmm. I've been a horror fan for over 20 years, and I've, you know, it's like, I don't know, it's well over 20 years.
I do love this show, but Vikings is... I like it more. Oh, I think it's maybe because I've watched two seasons of Vikings, and yeah, it's
longer.
I'm ready for Vikings to start.
I know. How long? 6 months?
March. So yeah, six months.
Bastards.
I know.
I thought it was February. It was February last year, wasn't it? And January the year before that.
Was it?
I want to say
maybe it will be February.
I heard it was March.
That's because they're jerks.
Yeah. They're just a bunch of jerks.
Mm-hmm.
And then we're going to get another season of Penny Dreadful in May?
Yes. That's when it started last year, or this year. So, yeah, May. Which I'm looking forward to that, too. So, all right. Well, that's it. So, you know, Steve and I may do something between now and then. We're not sure. We may pod on some movies possibly related.
Strawberry Shortcake, 80s style.
That's right.
Yeah.
My Little Pony.
While we eat the strawberry shortcake cereal, which made me vomit.
I got dirty.
When I was a kid.
Yeah. Is that anything like tossing the strawberry shortcake salad? Is this some code that I don't know about? Is this like a bro ho ho code?
Bro.
All right. So we'll talk to you then. So until then, I'm your host, Em.
And I'm Steve.
And I'm Paul.
And I'm the devil. This was a No Ship Network podcast brought to you by Axolotl Tank Productions. is now.